How do you stay focused writing 62 pages when you usually have problems staying focused? And how do you steer your company through a global pandemic while writing about doing exactly that? Sit back and listen in.
Hi, we are Lottie and Emilie, and you are listening to another episode of the Thesis Talks. So today, our one and only guest is Louis. A big warm welcome to you.
Thank you so much, Lottie and Emilia. Happy to be here.
Hi, Louis. So good that you're here with us today. So you have just handed in your master thesis. You're also studying at Copenhagen Business School, Organizational Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And I have got to know you as someone who is very active, very engaged, and really loves what he is doing and what he's studying. So to get to know you a little, maybe tell us what you actually love about what you study.
Well, thank you for that, firstly. But yes, well, I do love the program. I'm studying organizational innovation and entrepreneurship. Just handed in my thesis about 2 weeks ago, ready to defend it. And I really love the program. I think it was extremely rewarding. I grew a lot as a person and professionally as well. I thought it was super interesting, the innovation and entrepreneurship, right? I don't think you can have one without the other. So that's why I really want to study this program.
Amazing. And you said that you grew a lot as a person through the program.
Yes.
And how did you think that the program actually, you know, entitled you to do that?
Well, to be honest, I was quite... you know, I was really that one-sided person that had very strong opinions and everyone else was wrong. So as a person, I learned how to listen, how to work in teams, which is crazy, right? Because I started at 28, the program. Organizing growth was one of the classes where we had a listening exercise. And I just noticed that for the past 28 years of my life, I haven't really been listening the proper way. That's just one example of how I grew personally in the program.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That's super cool. And you've actually also come a long way to Copenhagen.
Yeah.
You're coming from all the way from Mexico.
That's right.
Very nice. Do you actually, do you miss it sometimes, especially now when the Copenhagen summer isn't so nice?
Well, I think you could always miss home, right? I miss my family, of course. I miss the food. But I think regarding to the weather, everyone complains about the weather everywhere. In Mexico, they complain about the weather. So that's not a factor for me. I absolutely love Copenhagen. I think it's the best city in the world.
Awesome.
Amazing.
That's a good response.
Yeah. All right. So just to dive into the topic of the thesis a little bit. So your overall topic was innovation in times of crisis, and then can of course be a lot of different things, but you chose to focus on which strategies traveling agencies are utilizing to survive the COVID-19 crisis.
Yes.
And we know that you were actually affected by the crisis while writing yourself in two different ways. Firstly, because of course the writing process has been different during the COVID-19, but also because you actually have a traveling agency yourself. Mm-hmm. So what did how did you experience that? And how did you see the crisis actually affect your own company?
Yeah, so very good questions. I think to answer that, I have to go a little bit more to the past and say that that was not actually my initial thesis subject. So I was actually writing with someone else. We wanted to write about blitzscaling. How do companies, scale by burning as many resources as possible in a more aggressive expansion way. This is what we were going to discuss, but then actually we had a lot of pressure problems and we didn't work well as a team. So we decided to split up, or more likely he decided to split up with me, to be honest. He was very pressured and I felt he was very nervous because of this COVID-19 crisis, and he moved back. So yeah, he decided to split up. And for me, that was kind of a shock, but it wasn't so much in retrospect because we didn't really know each other, right? He approached me on LinkedIn and he said, oh, it's interesting what you're doing, and I would love to write the thesis with you. We met one time, and we decided to write it. For me, it was very awkward finding a partner. I don't know if I'm jumping a little bit more on your future questions here, but yeah, that was my first topic. And after that happened, it was just like a no-brainer, right? Why am I spending so much time in a subject that it wasn't really mine in the beginning, like, to start with? Mm-hmm. Why am I? And I had so many things going on. As Lottie says, I love to be active. I was on Millennial Consulting, helping companies there. I was, working in my company a couple hours a day. And I was having a part-time job, which I still have. And of course, I had to write my thesis as well. So one nice walk in the park with my girlfriend, she made me realize that I'm spending too much effort on too many things. So I do recommend that when you write your thesis, you really focus on this. Everything else can wait. Prioritizing your time is very important. And I just felt it was just a huge epiphany that I got. That is, why am I not writing a thesis about how to save my travel agency in times of COVID, right? And this is where it led me. You know, it was a very good decision in retrospect, and I'm very happy with that.
That's really good to hear. So it must have been pretty frustrating, but also fascinating at the same time to experience exactly what you were writing about on your own, on your own body simultaneously.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, I just wanted to find ideas or inspiration on how to save myself.
Yeah.
In one sentence, right? So it is innovation in times of crisis. What strategies are travel agencies utilizing to survive the COVID-19 crisis? Mm. That's the subject.
Yeah, it's a good motivation for yourself, I'm guessing.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Did you see on your own travel agency what was the hardest thing to get through the crisis?
Yeah.
What was the downtakes that you experienced?
Well, it's the thing is that this crisis is not like any other crisis. It's not like the 2008 economic crisis that people don't have money. There are always some people with money in crisis, but this is not the same situation at all. Right now, people cannot travel. There's travel ban restrictions. Meeting in public or meeting other people is heavily, banned or is illegal in some countries. So it's not that the business is going wrongly. It's that there's no business, full stop.
Mm-hmm. And then, okay, so to continue your journey on how you approach your thesis, you then decided to go with this new topic that you were personally motivated to work on. Mm-hmm. And you talked to travel agencies from Denmark, the Netherlands, Mexico, mm-hmm. Czech Republic, and Spain.
Yes.
First of all, that's a pretty huge sample and many countries. Why did you talk to especially these agencies? Was it contacts? Did you go for the countries?
Mm-hmm. So I would love to give a more sophisticated answer than I just asked my first network for who has travel agencies and they're being affected, right? Well, every travel agency was affected. But yeah, I just contacted my immediate network and then asked them if they knew someone with a travel agency. So my sample, it's different countries. I want to get a more holistic understanding of what are other countries facing. Because, I mean, there's no doubt that every country has dealt with the COVID-19 crisis differently. It's not the same COVID-19 in Denmark as it is in Mexico or Spain, right? So I thought that was interesting to focus on a broader sample.
Mm-hmm. Did you actually see some differences in how those agencies approached it? I mean, a bit later we're going into your findings. Maybe that's also something that we'll come back to there.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, just off the bat, the support from governments to the travel agencies are are black or white. Either you get support or you don't get support at all. For example, in Mexico, you do not get support. And in Denmark, they not only pay your employees, for example, they not only pay your employees, but if you have debts with your clients, they would pay the clients. And that is pretty insane. I mean, coming from a Mexican perspective on travel agencies, yes, we had clients that we had to refund. But of course, we also have paid, I don't know, travel agencies, not travel agencies, we paid the airlines or hotels, and we're still negotiating the refunds. So we are caught in the middle, right? Travel agencies are basically the sales force of tourism. So we are caught in the middle between the suppliers and the clients. And the government support was, while I was interviewing some travel agency owners, I just felt like, wow, that's insanely different. Like, we don't get any support, and a lot of travel agencies do.
Could you actually be a mediator for knowledge or approaches that you could tell one company, hey, look, company A did this and that. Maybe that's a thing for you to do?
I mean, yes, that was the whole point of this crisis, right? It was more selfish reasons. It was to help me first. I cannot help others if I'm drowning. But yeah, after this, I'm happy to, you know, upload my thesis and put my findings everywhere so other travel agencies could read it and potentially help them, or at least get inspired with some of the strategies they used.
Yeah. So talking about your findings broadly, maybe it's time to jump right into them.
Okay. Yes. So what I did, my strategy was, of course, there's no literature regarding the COVID-19 strategies that are travel agencies utilizing, right? Because it's so new. It's happening still. It's still happening. So it was hard to find a framework or a paper that could guide me with interview questions or would guide me with crisis management in this type of crisis, you know, this particular type of crisis. So what I did, and there was my strategy, was to look at the 2008 economic crisis and find how travel agencies managed the crisis and that specific crisis, to use some of those strategies, ask the travel agency owners and see if they followed some or if they had new ones. So that was my idea. That was my strategy. And what I found was that most of the companies in the 2008 crisis actually fired people. That was the most popular. That was the most popular strategy. There's no money. They fire people. It's quite obvious. It quite, I don't know, quite brutal. But in this particular crisis, the COVID-19, I think there's a more of a humanitarian approach to firing people. They are actually doing their best, including myself, to keep them on board because of the nature of the crisis, I think. That was one finding. Another finding is that, of course, from 2008 to 2020, there's 12 years of development in social media. There's development in marketing. There's complete different ways that companies conduct their businesses. So I found that in the marketing area, the category, the content the travel agencies are utilizing right now is hopeful messages, you know, like they're still posting content, they're trying to keep their clients or their target audience engaged. They are being, yeah, in general, very hopeful, and they try to make little games, they try to, you know, personalize their content by introducing some of their clients, and clients are very appreciative of that. So the client relationship management has been playing a big deal in the practices that travel agencies are utilizing today versus 2008 crisis. That's another very interesting one. And yes, another one I would say is the business model innovation, which for me is the most interesting finding, because a lot of companies in 2008, they weren't even in the roster of options of practices. There wasn't like innovation or doing new businesses. It was just basically keeping to their niche, keeping to their industry, selling cheaper discounts, selling, you know, gift cards, gift certificates, selling, I don't know, doing things completely related to their business model. And in this crisis, I found that some companies actually completely changed their business model to survive, right? To capture value. And that's what all companies should do. So one company, for example, in Spain, what they did was to actually sell UR machines for disinfection machines. And that's something that they didn't do before. They found, basically, the owner read in the, in a newspaper that one hospital in the local community bought this machine. And then it just clicked for him, you know. There's a new segment, there's a new clients there, you know, they're demanding new products or services. So a company that is agile or a company that is dynamic or has dynamic capabilities, they can, you know, sense, seize, and take advantage of these opportunities. And that's what they did. And now they're selling hundreds of machines in Turkey, the US, and in Spain.
That's really interesting, especially the last point you made about actually pivoting your business model in order to survive. And you could also see that as an example with all of the companies actually pivoting their business so that they could produce hand sanitizers instead of their usual product. And I don't know, this might be a difficult question to answer, but do you think that companies are doing that because of the type of the crisis? And do you think that if we have had the COVID-19 crisis in 2008, 2009, do you think that the companies would be ready to pivot their business model in order to comply to change their product in order to survive if it had been back then?
Yes, of course. Okay. I have no doubt that when people are in very bad situations or in desperate situations, innovation comes to place. There's no doubt about that. So due to the nature of the 2008 crisis, people were like, let's just wait a little bit more. We can just wait a couple of months or 1 year, and then we could come back to what we know that works. But right now, uncertainty plays such a big role that they are forced to find new companies and travel agencies are forced to find new revenue streams. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact we still don't know until when. For example, we know for sure 2020 is lost, right? But the new normality, as we call it, might even be extremely harder for us. And it might be the end of travel agencies as an industry, actually. So like I said before, travel agencies are basically the sales force of tourist operators. That's, you know, people that actually do tourism, for example, in Czech Republic. And the client, which could be a family in Denmark. Travel agencies connect them. But this new normality might be the end of travel agencies. Probably not, but it might reconsider in a very aggressive matter the nature of this business.
Yeah. Okay. So you think if people are not using traveling agencies, how will they just plan that traveling by their own? Or do you think we're going to travel less? Or
It's not crazy to think. I mean, I don't think any of you girls hire a travel agent anymore to go to Greece or to Spain, right? It's just basically the people who do it is extremely wealthy people or people who are technologically challenged, or people that want experiences and you offer something very different, right? Like, you know, for example, my travel agency, which is a receptive travel agency for exchange students. What we offer is the knowledge of Mexico and a lot of secrets that you cannot find online, right? So we take you to the middle of the jungle in a place that is impossible to pronounce for Europeans or Americans. And then we make you jump 12 waterfalls down, and we organize that with a little bit of a nightlife in the pool, and we also go to a museum, to a surreal castle. I mean, we make the experience, and people buy the experience. But in the end, they could do it by themselves, ultimately, right? They could do it by themselves. So yes, to answer that question, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So maybe what you're saying is that in the future, the traditional travel agency might have died out, but then the travel agencies that offer you opportunities that you can't really find yourself, those are the ones who are going to thrive moving forward.
Definitely. And the travel agencies, they are dynamic. I think having that dynamic capability. For example, I'll just give you another finding. Most of the companies that I interviewed have a very small overhead, or a very low overhead. Overhead, like meaning low costs, very few employees. On average, I would say, if you take the outlier of the 400 company that I interview with 400 employees, the average would be 5 or 6, right? So if you have such a low structure, cost structure, it's super easy to keep afloat in a crisis. One company, for example, had only like 2 employees, and then consultants, they call them travel consultants, they just earn commissions. So if there's no business, they don't need to pay them, right? So that's pretty interesting that travel agencies that I interviewed are very smart. I mean, without knowing, they had a really good resilience scheme, and they're surviving well. I mean, most of them, only one closed down as a strategy, which is also a finding. In 2008, there was, I don't know why, closing down shop was not a practice, and it's a totally you know, valid practice, closing down. And one company did, one travel agency in Denmark, unfortunately, closed.
Mm.
Won't be the first, won't be the last, I'm sure.
Yeah. Mm.
So as your travel agency is focusing on the special experiences that you can't get Googling online where to go, you're probably in a spot that is a bit more advantaged than others. Did your findings that you have during your thesis change anything, any of your personal strategies for your own company?
Yes, definitely. So first of all, after all the frustration of not getting support from the government, I decided to move past that because that won't take me anywhere, right? So I found that a lot of companies are just getting in debt to pay their employees. That's something we have been doing to maintain our employees, right? So that is the strategy. We've been paying our employees right now for 5 months, and eventually money's gonna run out. So we have been trying to innovate our business model. Coming back to that, we are actually moving into real estate, and we're selling apartments and getting commissions from that. I mean, what is interesting is that, and that's something that opened my mind, is that a company, it's not what it does, it's the allocation of their resources. So every company has people and has knowledge and has skills. And it's how do you allocate the energy or effort of those resources that makes you survive or makes you capture value. And that is a quite general definition. So it doesn't mean necessarily that we have to stick to one economic activity, right? If we're good salespeople, because in general, you know, travel agencies are very good salespeople, we can sell anything then. So we're selling apartments. We have been having some success there, and we're selling masks. In Mexico, you know, governments are not really supplying the amount of masks we're doing. So we collaborated with a small Mexican company that are fabricating these N95 masks, and we are actually helping them sell it, and we get a commission from it. And I think it's great. We're supporting a Mexican small business, which is not so small anymore, and we're also providing value. So yeah, there's many ways a company can pivot. It's a small word for completely changing your business.
Yeah. That's really interesting. It's also kind of like you are doing in practice what you are writing about other companies doing in your thesis. So yeah, that's kind of a meta layer on top of the thesis. It's really interesting.
It is. I think it's completely... It's a very unique experience, I would say, because I'm interviewing people that I am, you know, that I can relate completely, right? So the conversations always took longer because then they ask me about what I'm doing, and then I could feel their frustration. It's not something that I'm completely, you know, alienated from.
Mm. Do you think that was a big advantage for your own thesis, or did it bias you in some ways as well? Was it hard to keep the emotional distance sometimes?
Both of them are correct. So both of them apply. I it was hard because I did have some, you know, like that frustration. Well, you should do this. Or this works. But I just needed to, you know, go back to what I learned from the program and just listen. That was the point of the interview. So it's a constant struggle with myself of shut up, and ask the right questions. And then afterwards, we can talk about something else.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So you took your researcher personality first, and then you switched
It's hard. It was extremely challenging. You know me.
Well, great to hear that you actually could really utilize something that you had learned throughout the program when doing your thesis. That's good to hear that you could utilize the courses that you have had.
Absolutely. And that's just one way, right? I mean, that listening, I mean, it's pretty basic, but it's so basic that I feel a lot of people don't know how to listen. And it's a huge problem. More than we think.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So we mentioned earlier, it's not only your sample companies and your own company that struggled during COVID, but your own writing process was also influenced, because you mentioned earlier, you completely changed your thesis topic. You started out with a partner, but ended up writing on your own because you had to split. That got us thinking about what were some of the major, we call them fuck-ups, that you had in the process of writing your thesis. And how did you overcome them? If you could take us on a little reflection journey.
Why didn't you do this podcast 1 year ago, Lottie? Then I could have heard someone else. Anyway, I'm of course happy to help. So, biggest fuck-ups. I think selecting your thesis partner is extremely, extremely important. More than you think, more than you know. But it's also extremely awkward, I think. I feel like it was like finding someone to be your boyfriend in first grade. It was so weird. You know, like, I didn't feel comfortable to put myself out there and be, hey, do you want to go to prom with me? Or do you want to be my thesis partner? Mm. And I don't know. I just, I took the easy road, which was having a conversation with the first person who approached me. And that's not necessarily the best option. I do believe if I went back, I would have not, of course, written it with someone I don't know. I would have written it with someone from my same program or a friend. I mean, friends, I don't think real friends will, you know, end their friendship because of the thesis. And it's also very nice to have a partnership there. I mean, it really helped me that Levy, he was writing with someone else, but that someone else was in France. So we kind of team up and, you know, work on our thesis here in my apartment. And it's extremely motivating, right? If you're doing it by yourself, it depends on who you are. But I am very hard to... I'm a person that has extreme attention deficit disorder. So focusing like 20 minutes was a super big challenge for me. But what helped me was actually doing baby steps. So if I couldn't find any focus, I'm like, okay, it's 12:45. I will focus on this and not look at my phone until 1 p.m. That was my strategy. And then I'm like, okay, great. Now let's go for 1:30. And then it did it, and then up till one more hour. And believe it or not, it sounds so stupid, but it helped me, you know, gain that focus that we, as our generation, is so hard to maintain. We have multiple screens. We have our phone. We have the Netflix going. We have, you know, our computer. And, oh, my God, and within the phone, there's so many apps, so many people contacting you, so many things going on. So focus is something that's so challenging. You'll see when you are writing your thesis. It's hard to maintain focus, and those things help me, for sure.
Yeah, I heard about an app where you could do some, you know, where you could time your concentration, so it lets you know when you can.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's called Flat Tomato. I haven't been using it myself because I actually do the same thing. I just set a timer and then it rings when I'm done concentrating. Nice. But there is an app called Flat Tomato that actually does that. So just a quick tip for people doing, who needs the same kind of structure, because I can really relate to that as well. So that's a good tip.
Another thing is that you should really start the process as earlier as possible. I really recommend the YouTube channel of Klaus. Klaus has a YouTube channel. that he basically explains how a thesis is done and what you should.
For those who don't know, could you quickly introduce who Klaus is?
So Klaus is a teacher, a doctor and a teacher from our program. He teaches organizing growth, which is, I thought it was a very interesting class. And he also has a YouTube channel where he teaches how is the process of writing a thesis. And it's very well explained. I can't remember the name, but maybe you can find it later of the exact name of that channel. But I think it's called Organizing Growth and then Writing Your Thesis. So Dr. Klaus Springborg, and then you can find it in YouTube. And that definitely helped me, you know, it's just, you know, going back and seeing it from a very, you know, like a meta perspective, what's the order in which you should write your thesis? You would think that you should start with a subject, but you are wrong, right? You should start with reading literature that you find interesting. It's kind of like a circle. It's a process of like an infinite circle. I don't find it a very linear step by step, but this YouTube channel will definitely help you understand how to begin your research, what to write first. I mean, how to make an interview guide, what you should write first. I mean, first of all, it's the literature review. You read some papers, you find something that is interesting, you find the limitations and the future research, then you can find a niche where you can expand the knowledge. And that should be basically what he says is that should be related to something that you are either really deeply interested in or something you want to learn, right? So in my case, it was both. But in some cases, for example, someone who's really interested in data science but has no previous knowledge of that, you can take advantage of this thesis time to get, you know, dive in and learn it. And that's a very good advice for thesis.
Yeah. Really good tip to pass on.
Yes, many good learnings. So we learned finding a partner is important. Don't just go with the first person you meet. Create a structure for yourself so you're able to focus, actually, and use the necessary tools that you need to help you focus. What did you say? Start early. That is something that we don't like to hear, but it's probably good to know.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but to be honest, I don't feel you need at all. I'm not sure if I should say this. I don't think you need 4 months. I don't think so. If you are concentrated, focused, and you work hard, then I don't think you need more than 2 months. If you're very focused and if you have a good discipline time, you know, working time schedule. But for example, I don't know about you, but I need that time pressure. If I don't have the time pressure, then I feel like I don't have to do it. I can postpone it for another day. But it really helped me in the end to have the time pressure. And I just made a plan, you know, like this day I will write the introduction, or in 2 days I'll write the introduction. And I did. Or in 2 days I will, you know, make a little calendar for yourself. And doesn't have to be very ambitious, but it always helps, right? And this week I'm going to find a subject that I'm extremely interested in. That's a pretty okay time frame. And you need to, of course, break it down more. I don't know, read one paper a day. Of first day, you list all the things you're interested in an Excel file. Great. The next day, you find 2 papers out of those things you listed. The next day, you read one of them. Stuff like that, you know, baby steps will help you a lot.
Yeah, nice. All right. I think we're coming towards the end of the interview. We just have a few rounding off questions for you. So the first one is, name 3 things that you wouldn't have survived your thesis time without.
Let me just answer that. Without can be anything. Without the support of my girlfriend, I would say that she helped me read it, gave me a lot of advice. Writing alone is challenging because especially me, I've never written a thesis before. So that was very important. Support from friends like Levi as well. Having that mutual support. When you're slacking, you see someone work, then you're like, okay, maybe I should work, right? That's another thing. And the third one, I think the support that my supervisor gave me was definitely something that I couldn't have, you know, I couldn't have survived the thesis without. He helped me a lot.
That's great.
Yes, definitely.
And looking back, what advice would you give yourself in the beginning of the process?
Write with someone you enjoy spending time. Write with a friend. Write with someone that it's okay to argue with. I think sometimes when we're so easily manipulated in doing something we don't want to do, I felt like I was just following my previous thesis partner because he's done a thesis before and he really likes the subject. I'm like, fine, let's do it. And if I just kept going that way, I couldn't have done what I did. I couldn't have, you know, researched this super valuable topic that actually helped my company. So listen to what you want. It's also very, very valid.
Okay, and the last one, who would you recommend us to talk to? Is there anybody who has written about an interesting topic or anybody you can think of that you would like to hear more about their thesis process?
Yesterday, I talked to Will Johns. He's from my program as well. And he wrote about social innovation and entrepreneurship. And I think it was very interesting. I think you should definitely contact him or Marcus Schneider. He actually did a crazy strategy and interviewed, had almost 900 answers for his subject. Yes. And he had a very unique strategy. So I don't know if I can say it now. Maybe you should ask him what he did.
Wow. Interesting. What a teaser.
Yeah. Definitely.
Looking forward to that. So, Lewis, thank you so much for taking your time to talk to us and bringing us into all your insights and making us a bit smarter than before. I think we both learned a lot, and it was great to hear from you. Now we didn't prepare you for what's coming now, so we're just going to throw you into the cold water because usually this is how we end our thesis talk. We give you time for your Oscar thank you thesis speech. So let's just pretend I'm handing over the thesis award to you, and now you have 30 seconds and can thank everyone.
All right. Okay. Thank you. I want to thank all the people who helped me. This was a big milestone in my life. It was, I think, the hardest thing I've ever done. So I'm truly indebted with my father, my mom, with my girlfriend Simone, with Levi, my friend, and especially to my brother Juan, because he's been, you know, in the front line, holding down the fort in our own travel agency. So yes, I couldn't have done it with all of you, without all of you guys. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bravo.